Actually, one of the hardest people on me and one of the hardest things to get over was my dad. My dad told me that I was stupid for quitting my job and don't call me for money. I'm like, thanks for your confidence, Dad. And I love my dad. And I didn't hold it against him. I'd already done a lot of mindset work until that point. And I just realized he's fearful for me because he can't do what I'm doing, right? He's placing his limitations on me, but it's not a reflection of me.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Melanie McDaniel is the founder of Freestyle Capital Group, a boutique private equity firm that partners with passive investors to invest in private equity real estate transactions across a variety of recession-resistant asset classes. Melanie offers a boutique experience to her investors and aims to have a personal relationship with each investor friend. Melanie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Hey, the pleasure's mine. You know, the same three questions I ask everyone who comes on this show is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there? But just, you know, before you answer that, why don't you tell our listeners kind of a little bit about your nomadic existence and then work backwards?
So, I mean, if you hear my story from the beginning, even as a small child, you'll know that I just love to travel. And I had a W-2. I was a park ranger and I, you know, saved up my leave to travel. It was always the stressful thing to like plan a trip. You have so many days off. You got to travel one day. You got to go and be a tourist and travel home. And then you go to work. And man, I did that forever. But I love travel so much. I wanted to travel longer periods of time. So the longest I ever got to travel in my whole life until I became nomadic was 3 weeks. And so I got a taste of slow matting, slow travel. And yeah, I decided I wanted to figure out a way to live and have a lifestyle where I can go for a month at a time anywhere in the world. So that's kind of how I ended up in the nomad life. I've sold everything. I'm a minimalist. I have my car in case I get stuck in the US like I did, but I started 2020 in Thailand before COVID hit and my plan was to be abroad mostly. So, but yeah, at the moment I'm in Austin, Texas, but headed to Mexico at the end of the month.
That is awesome. Let's rewind the tape then and go from park ranger to real estate syndicator and investor. What was that journey like?
So I was raised, go to school, get good grades, go to college, get a job, right? So when I got done with high school, I joined the military because I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I figured with the military, I get money for school, I serve my country, travel, because of course, you're going to hear this theme, Melanie, and traveling. I knew that if I joined the military, specifically the Navy, which I ended up joining, I would travel. So I got lucky. My first duty station was in Italy. And then I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up still when I was getting out of the Navy. So I decided to study tourism. So I have a bachelor's degree in travel administration. So again, the theme continues. I was working in tourism. I was a deckhand or co-pilot, whatever you want to call it, on a tourist submarine in Waikiki. And I wasn't doing that for too long before I realized I needed to like do a real job. You know, my dad was putting pressure on me to get a job with a pension, right? So I ended up becoming a park ranger. My dad's wife at the time, well, still is, was a park ranger. She worked at Rocky Mountain National Park. I was going to school in Denver, so I got to see her do that a lot. I'm like, ah, I can do that while I figure stuff out, right? So that do it for a short period of time turned into 9 years. But it was in year 7 that I read Rich Dad Poor Dad. So in 2015, somehow that book got in my hands. I don't even know how. I'm just happy it did. Read that and it changed my life, the trajectory of my whole life. It took me 2 years to shift the mindset from W-2, pension, career. I had 14 years in with my military time and the time I spent as a park ranger. Like, you know, I was on a really great path to retire and be normal, be mediocre. Anyway, read the book. It took me 2 years to change the mindset. From the book, I realized that real estate was the answer. Cash flowing assets that appreciate over time. I decided to do the stepping stone of being a real estate agent because I figured I need to, one, get into the space, learn real estate, do transactions. Didn't really know what I wanted to do except that I wanted to scale. And I knew that because of Bigger Pockets, probably listening to many, many hours while I was on patrol. Of Bigger Pockets. I didn't want to be a real estate agent forever. I gave myself 3 years. 3 years was the max. So I did that. Everything worked out fine. First 6 months were horrible. I hardly made any money, but then it started hitting. I was servicing mostly investors because I had all this knowledge to help them. And I built a team because I had too many clients, and then my team started to feed me so I could free up my time. And I invested my time and money in learning how to buy apartments, because by that time I figured that that's the route I wanted to go, is the economies of scale. So in 2.5 years of being a real estate agent, I was done with that and moved on to the next thing, which is what I do now. So being part of a GP team that syndicates large assets, multifamily, I do a couple of others as well now, but specifically, and that was a journey as well, I'm more on the capital side rather than acquisitions or operations.
That is intriguing. So let me see if I get these timelines down based upon your story. 2015, you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. 2017, 2 years later, you start doing the real estate agent thing. And 2019 and a half, roughly, you said, all right, we're done with the real estate agent thing. Now we're doing only syndications, multifamily assets, and whatever other asset classes you're getting into.
Yeah, pretty much end of right at the beginning of 2020. So December 2019 is when I left where I was being an agent and moved to Thailand.
Wow. Okay. That's fantastic. So one, I love the courage involved in your story. You know, I think there's a component there that you may find very natural that others probably find very attractive when they go, hey, wait, she just thought it and said, hey, that's a good idea. I think I'll go do that. What are some keys you would say that help you just do?
So it was not easy at all. I would say going from park ranger with that mentality to entrepreneur, taking a chance, was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I've been through 2 academies, not including boot camp. Law enforcement academies, boot camp. Like, I've been through a lot of stuff in my life, and quitting my job and taking the plunge and doing something new was the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. So what got me through that, besides, you know, in those 2 years from 2015 to 2017, was a lot of education, a lot of mindset work. And what I would listen to was YouTube compilations of motivational speeches. So think Jim Rohn, Tony Robbins, Gary Vee, like all those guys, and they're like set to music. So I would listen to that and it would pump me up or whatever. I'd read books. It was really about education, for sure, the, you know, objective stuff that you learn about real estate, but also the mindset work was a huge piece as well. Yeah, just totally shifting the mindset from being an employee to being an entrepreneur, but also learning we have one life to live. I am in the driver's seat. And if you take responsibility for that, you can make your life whatever you want. So the 2 books that changed my life, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I already mentioned. But this book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle was the mindset shift book I needed that gave me permission to not be a victim, to grab the wheel of my own life and do whatever it took to have success.
That's fantastic. I love that. What were some of the things maybe that your fellow employees, perhaps in the park ranger space, what were some of the looks you got? What were some of the thoughts or maybe even comments that you had to rebuff their objections?
Yeah, it was already tough just being a female in the space of law enforcement with a bunch of alpha males. Melanie marches to the beat of her own drum was one that I heard. Oh, Melanie, you're going to have to be a real estate mogul or whatever. I'm like, yeah. Oh yeah. They thought my head was in the clouds for sure. And cause I would always walk around, I'm happy. I'm like, hey, you choose to be happy today. It's up to you. You know, they hated it because they're all miserable. They don't see a way out. They're on this path and everybody's on their own journey. I was probably a little bit too pushy of my ways because I wanted to free people, but it's not my job. It's their job. It's their path. It's their time. It's not mine. It was okay. I was on the constant defense for my thinking. But now I had a coffee with one of my park ranger buddies in Boise over the summer, and he's about to retire. And he's like, no, I get what you're talking about now. He has all these dreams to like start his own business and whatever. He's like, I'm so proud of you. I'm like, yeah, you are such a jerk. He was one of my supervisors as well. He gave me a really hard time, but it doesn't matter. It's our journey. You have to deflect what people say or think.
That's it. You hit the key point there, because we're all going to have the naysayers, right? We're all going to have the people that, it doesn't matter what you're in, what business you're in, if people don't understand it, they're going to look at it sideways and go, wait, you're doing what? And how are you going to do that again? And all we hear is you can't do that. And overcoming that by just not doing it to prove them wrong, but really just to say that, no, this is a path I've carved out. This is how I'm going to do it.
Proving them wrong could be a really good piece of fuel, though. Actually, one of the hardest people on me and one of the hardest things to get over was my dad. Mm. My dad told me that I was stupid for quitting my job and don't call me for money. I'm like, thanks for your confidence, Dad.
Wow.
And I love my dad. And I didn't hold it against him. I'd already done a lot of mindset work until that point. And I just realized he's fearful for me because he can't do what I'm doing, right? He's placing his limitations on me, but it's not a reflection of me.
Right.
So I had to place that in a compartment, forgive him, use it as fuel. And now everything's fine and he can, you know, sleep at night, but it's not his fault. He just only knows what he knows and he reacts from that space. And who am I to judge him for having that? He cared so much about his daughter. He was truly fearful for what I was doing. I never held that against him, but I used it as fuel.
That's a great way to compartmentalize that. And I think that's probably helpful for some of our listeners because these are softer, but harder in a sense, skills to master. Because rejection, objection to what it is we're doing and being able to see it from their perspective, say, okay, that's your fear talking and we're going to stick that over here. Thank you, but I'm carrying on. Transition here into what it is you're doing today. I know you said you're on the capital raise side of things. How did you develop your thesis? How did you find your first partners? Walk us through kind of that side of the business development.
Sure. So I started just as being an apartment buyer, right? So I did acquisitions type stuff, talked to brokers. I bought my first 24 unit. It was a joint venture, so not a syndication. Went through that whole process, due diligence and some asset management, but it didn't take me too long to figure out. I hated most of the jobs that I was doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't have to raise money. So that was the last job. I'm like, that could be fun. But I hated calling brokers and whenever I come against friction, and I don't want to make that call. I have to sit back and listen to myself. Okay, Melanie, why do you not want to call this broker right now? Is it because you're lazy? I don't think so. Is it because that's just not your gift? That's not your skill? It doesn't interest you? That is probably the fact. So I decided when I look for partners, I'm just going to look for the people who do the things I don't love to do. So the underwriters, the acquisitions people, and the operators, asset managers. I just want to talk to people. I love going to conferences, meetups, RIAs, whatever. I just want to meet people. And that's my skill. So I just stay in my lane. So it took me a while to figure that out. I did Michael Blanc's coaching program. So that helped me get my first 24 unit. But it was at a conference in the summer of 2019 before I was still an agent and doing these apartment conferences. And for some reason, at that point, I got clarity in this idea that I can just be a capital partner. Like I don't have to do all those other things. And it was so relieving, so clarifying, because now I had a direction. And then I just went all in on that. So, you know, I was still an agent. It was another 6 months before I left the agent world, went full-time, moved to Thailand, built out my business, my platform, my website, my lead magnet, my newsletter, my funnel, everything, built out the business, started talking to investors, launched in February of 2020, and then came back to the US to go to a conference, the Best Ever Conference. And then after that, of course, COVID happened. So I kind of lost 6 months there because honestly, I didn't know if real estate or multifamily was the best investment anymore. We were all kind of sitting. Some people who had been in the business a lot longer were buying deals and good for them because that turned out to be probably a good idea. But I didn't know. So I was sitting on the sidelines. My newsletter said, I hope you're safe. I'm sitting on the sidelines. More to come next month, right? That was my newsletter for 6 months. But then that July, when some of my operators that I wanted to raise capital for started doing deals, but they weren't calling me for capital. I was like, I got something wrong here. Something's wrong. They're not calling me. And I just realized, and this was, you know, could answer one of your questions, like what are the hangups? One of the fail points is I assumed I picked my three favorite groups and they were going to call me. But no, you need to network and know hundreds of people. And well, I mean, not hundreds, like 30, 40 operators, then pick your favorite ones. Because even when they send you a deal, it may not work for you. So it took me another 6 months from July to December. I started getting deals, but nothing passed the sniff test. Nothing I liked. I wasn't going to raise capital. It took me until this July, a whole year and a half from when I left being an agent to doing my first deal. It was a year and a half. And I was working my butt off. I do this full time. This was not Melanie has a W-2 and does this in her free time. This is Melanie around the clock is doing real estate. And it still took me a year and a half. We'll say a year because I think COVID kind of took the wind out of the sails there. We'll say a year. But when I did one, I immediately did a second and a third. So I've done three since July, which is the law of the first deal, right? When you get one, it just kind of happens after that. So the key is having clarity on what you want to do and then going all in once you have the clarity. But I think clarity is the first piece. In order to run in a direction, you have to be clear on the direction you're running.
Yep. I like that. I like that. That's a really good point. Talking about maybe knowing more than two or three operators. What are some risks maybe in, because not all operators are cut or created equal, right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody is a team that you're going to jive with. Not everybody's going to have the same investment philosophy. How do you make sure that that many operators at scale line up with what it is that you want to present to your investors as the team to partner with?
Yeah, just simple conversations with parameters and what the investment parameters are. Because I get plenty of deals across my desk that don't fit my parameters. I'm like, I told you I do 1980s newer class B and X, Y, and Z market. So yeah, it's important to have those conversations up front and to build real relationships with these people. So you know what theirs are and you know what yours are. So the relationship piece is first. And then when they're comfortable with you, they'll send you underwriting. And then that's the second piece. You can love them all day, but when you see their underwriting, you're like, oh no, oh no, no, no. And then you have spent all this time building a relationship and they send you the underwriting. You're like, this isn't going to work. I'm sorry.
Right. What are some things that come to mind? Maybe some examples that you saw in underwriting that you go, oh, maybe not names of properties or projects or partners, but you know, it's just in general, some ideas that you saw that triggered that response.
So for the four things I look at, of course, the jockey, the operator themselves, and experience sometimes is one I throw out pretty quick. Because if it's their first deal, I'm probably not your girl to raise money. The second thing is the market. I get deals in markets I don't love, or in markets I'll consider, but in an area I don't love. So the market can kill a deal pretty quick. And then the deal itself, aggressive underwriting is a big no for me. Compressing cap rates or too high of rent assumptions or not enough expense ratio, you know, all the stuff that are aggressive pieces of the underwriting. And then the fourth one, I throw a lot of deals out. Everything else could be great. But if their structure for the deal is not aligned with my investors, meaning they get paid acquisition fee, asset management fee, refi fee, dispo fee, fee for on their grandma's birthday, whatever. If they're getting fees and they're getting paid a lot of money and my investors are left holding the bag of the risk, it's a hard no for me. So I want to see alignment. I'm okay with GPs getting paid. It's how I get paid too. But I want them to have their asset management fee. I want them to hit some hurdles, potentially a waterfall or a hurdle with my investors. And then let's all share in the profits at the end. And we can talk about distribution fee. Of course, an asset management fee is reasonable as well. And then I've seen construction management fees from up to 10%. I mean, that's just a lot. So the fees matter. And I may not like one fee, but if they're really conservative or fair on another fee, it's all, every deal is so different. But those are the things that will kill a relationship for me.
Yeah, no, that's a very valid point. And those are hard things to dissect. Even if you're looking at the offering memorandums, even if you're looking through all the documents, at times getting those hard facts on a deal, what are exactly the fees? How does this spell out to me and my investors? That's a great point. The more fees you see, the less aligned potentially.
And sometimes the fees are hidden in the PPM and not like in the OM, and they don't highlight the fees, right? So a lot of passive investors aren't savvy enough. They haven't looked at enough deals to find those things themselves. So that's what I do. I'm here for my investors first. When an operator brings something to me, I'm like, I'm skeptical. You're my enemy. Let me look at this. I protect my ducklings. And then I'm like, okay, we can be partners now. And then everybody's happy, right? But at the end of the day, like, I don't want to do any bad deals. I will do no deals forever instead of one bad deal. So it's super important that I am that extra layer of protection for my investors. That's how I feel. Because they're not always sophisticated enough to dig through a PPM and see those. They don't even know to look for those.
And they don't want to. I mean, that's the beauty of being on the capital raise side of the general partnership, is that you're doing for your investors what many of them don't have the day. They don't have the space in their day to do it, to dig through this and to analyze and then to vet and to throw out. And that's one of the things I think that the role that you're holding is very important. Just because you have the filter, you know, for a lot of the people that come to you to obviously harness your expertise. Talk to us about the capital raise side. What was that like raising capital yourself without a track record? How did you overcome that hurdle?
So, I mean, you said I have a big social media presence. So it's not that I brought in a bunch of strangers to my world, but the people who I already knew could see my activity, expertise, whatever I was doing online. But a lot of my investors, honestly, are people already in the real estate space. They already understand real estate. I didn't have to like pull them out of the stock market and invest in real estate. They were already real estate people. And a lot of them were past clients when I was a real estate agent. And I had a big meetup when I was an agent. And I worked mostly with investors. So honestly, almost all of my capital comes from my past clients, that meetup, or someone I've met in the space at one of the, you know, meetups or virtual meetups. Honestly, COVID was a huge boost to my business because now I could go to meetups every day in every market. There were no boundaries, no time limits, and conferences were half the price and I didn't have to travel. I could attend so many more conferences. It was a blessing in disguise, the silver lining of COVID for sure.
Yeah, I've heard that quite a bit. And I hope some of that sticks around because certainly the capability to, like you said, attend meetups in any market, it's kind of widened a lot of people's nets on that front, or at least widened their reach to get outside of their local Wednesday morning coffee meetup with 30 other investors. And suddenly, you know, you can meet with those. You can now meet with 30 other investors 7 times a day in 7 different cities. So that's absolutely fantastic. I love your tenacity, your willingness to keep pushing forward and keep risking and getting it done. And congrats on getting, what'd you say, 3 deals done this year since July. And that's a long time for a lot of people, you know, waiting a year and a half. That's a long time and a lot of slogging it out. So obviously that, you know, speaks to your discipline and commitment to what it is that you're doing. So kudos to you on that front. Lastly, nomadic lifestyle. How do you make it all work doing this as a nomad?
So this is why I love capital raising, because I can do it on a Zoom call or virtually. The only time I need to be in a geography is if I have a deal. I like to at least go to the property. And honestly, if I was in Portugal and I had a partner, a capital raising partner, and they could go do it on my behalf, that would be okay too. But I've been to every property that I've raised capital for, and I'd like to keep that going. And then of course, with all my travels, I get to meet a lot of my investors and operators in person. If I know that I'm passing through a town and someone I know is there, I'll make an effort to see them. I don't think this virtual 2D world can replace real connection with real people and breaking bread and having a drink or whatever. So I try to do that. But yeah, I travel. I was supposed to be mostly international, but I do think it's good to be back here in the US between international trips. I think that will be my new cadence as COVID lifts and I can travel internationally more. I think I'll spend some time here. I don't have roots anywhere here, but I have been liking Austin quite a bit. So we'll see. Maybe after Mexico, I'll come back here, see how it feels to be like sticky.
That is fantastic. Melanie, I've enjoyed this. Thank you so much for your time. Let's jump here into a final few questions. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Well, I would say, don't drag your feet. I would say, get out there and network. I think networking is one of the biggest tools. I mean, the quote of your network is your net worth. It's a little cliche, and it may not be necessarily your net worth, but it might be your speed as well. Because to shorten timelines, you've got to get around somebody that's done it before you. So either network your butt off, join a coaching program, or hire a coach. But I don't recommend doing the coaching program or a coach until you have a bit more clarity. So I would attend meetups, locals, find some people to mentor you that are at least 1 or 2 steps ahead of you. But don't sit on the sidelines reading your books, listening to your podcast by yourself. Like, go out and be among people doing stuff.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. I love that. Question number 2 for you is, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I am helping a small piece of the world, one child at a time in Kenya. I have and have been since 2010 supporting a child at a school called Miracle House. One day I am going to get to their school and see the kiddos and go on a safari. But I support about my 3rd child now. They keep growing up. So that's my little give back.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good for you for doing that. And I hope Kenya's easy to get into. What's the capital of Kenya?
Nairobi.
Yeah, Nairobi. Shoot, man.
Actually, Joe, I have Bird. An aunt and uncle moving Nairobi, there.
You're there.
I have an aunt and uncle moving there like this week. So I'm thinking I'll go visit them, stay with them in Nairobi, and then launch from there. So yeah, 2022 is the year for Kenya.
2022, and then we'll add a bucket list item to that. Close the deal while you're in Kenya. Then you can truly be the international, intercontinental real estate investor. Melanie, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
So my website, freestylecapitalgroup.com, will lead you to all of my social media channels and my email if you download the lead magnet. We haven't really talked about this, but my lead magnet, this thing, right? This free download in exchange for your email, right? Is a marketing thing, but it's how to pave your path to financial freedom, where you're starting, where you're going, and it helps you back into you, your individual journey for passive income, which leads to financial freedom. So that is the little guide that they can download. And then of course, they'll end up in my world. guilt because that's just how we do things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Melanie, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.